Okay, so we are holding on Chof Holidays, the first line of the wide line, the last word of that line. We learned in the Mishnah, we discussed the various kinds of wicks and oils that you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles, because as we said, and as the Gemara is going to explain soon, they don't burn well, and therefore, according to Rashi, the problem is Shema Yata, that you may come to try and adjust the wick or the oil to make it burn at least a little better, or according to Tosfos Yeshanim and the Rambam, the idea is basically because then you're going to just give up and say, you know what, the light is too dim, I'm not going to bother staying in here, and then you're not going to have the enjoyment of Shabbos, which you're supposed to get, and you're not going to have the mitzvah, you're not going to have the shalom bayis that you're supposed to get from Shabbos candles or the mitzvah the rabbanon of light or the mitzvah the rabbanon of lighting Shabbos candles and enjoying the light of them. Okay. So we discussed a number of the wicks, what the materials are that the Mishnah is mentioning. So now continuing. The Mishnah said below the Psilas Ha'idan, you know, I'll have to use Psilas Ha'idan for wicks for Shabbos candles. So what is that? The Gemara explains Achvina. That means something from an arava tree. We learned yesterday we had Achvana, we had that arava's grow together like brothers, and therefore we called them Och over there. So here also it refers to something from the arava tree. Again, doesn't mean the arava branch itself. That's obviously wood. You can't possibly use it for a wick. It means this wool-like stuff that grows under the arava bark. So the Gemara tells in that connection, Ravin v'Abaya have a ka'azol the packs at the Tamarissa. Ravin and Abaya one time were walking in the valley of Tamarissa, the name of a valley in Babel. Chazinu lahan lahanu arisa. They saw some willow trees over there. So Robin says to Abaya, you should know when it says in the Mishnah Psilas Ha'idan, this is what it's talking about. Amalei, so Abaya, I guess, wasn't familiar enough with arava trees to know. Amalei, he says, he ate ba'amahu, and that's just wood. Obviously, you can't use wood for a wick. What's the habamina? Kolaf va'achvilei. So Robin took a piece of a branch off one of the trees and then peeled off the bark. And he showed him underneath the beni beni, the wool-like stuff that's in between the bark and the wood. You have this wool-like stuff in many different trees. He was saying in arava trees, which conceivably it could be used for wicks, but such wicks don't burn well. The Gemara calls it later mesachseches. The fire either jumps around on it or only burns on the outside of it. Two explanations in Rashi, and therefore it's no good for Shabbos candles. We said below the Silas on Midbar, we said you're not allowed to use wicks from the desert. So what is that? Shavra. So the Gemara says that's a shavra, which is some kind of grass or herb or something that grows in the desert that has long, skinny leaves, which again, conceivably you could make wicks out of it, and a pinch people do that, but you can't use them for Shabbos candles. We said below the Yeroika Shalchola, we said you can't use the green stuff that's on the surface of the water. So the Gemara asks Maihi, what is that talking about? Do we mean the dark green stuff that grows on water in pits, like where you have the stagnant water, and then you have algae grows on it? The problem is, of course, you can't use algae for wick. If you try to make anything out of it, it's just going to fall apart. You can't possibly make a wick out of it anyway. So the Papa says, right, Yuroika Shal Pnei Mayim doesn't mean algae that grow on the surface of the water. It means something that grows on the bottom of a ship that stays in the water for a long time. You have this greenish stuff, like barnacles or something that grow on the outside of it. That's the kind of thing. If it doesn't fall apart like algae does, conceivably you could try to make wicks out of it. But again, such wicks don't burn cleanly. The fire jumps around on them, only burns on the outside of them or whatever, and therefore it's no good. We learn in a braisa. We learn in a braisa that the Chachamim added two more kinds of things that you can't use for wicks that are not mentioned in the Mishnah: wool and hair. So we ask Tana Didan. So why doesn't our Tana list them? The reason is our Tana didn't have to list them. Semer michvat kovitz, because those kinds of things, if you try to use wool for a wick, it's just going to shrivel up when you try to light it. So it's not really going to light well at all. And seir ichruchi michroch, and hair is just going to burn because it doesn't really take up oil at all. So in other words, the braisa mentioned them for completeness' sake, but the Mishnah didn't need to list them because the Mishnah is only listing things that conceivably, hypothetically, you might want to use for wicks. and they do sort of burn, they do sort of take up the oil or the fuel or whatever into them, just not very well. As opposed to wool and hair don't even really do a decent job of that at all. You try to light a candle made with a wick made out of hair or wool, it's really not going to burn well in the first place. It's really not going to light very well in the first place, and therefore the Tanna of our Mishnah didn't find the need to mention those. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said, Veloy b'zefes, we said you can't light Shabbos candles using zefes. We mentioned a number of kinds of fuel, so let's define them. Zephes is what's called in Aramaic zifta, which is tar, or to be more exact, actually not tar really, which comes from petroleum, but rather pitch, which comes from pine trees and other such trees. Anyway, that's zephes. You can't use that for Shabbos candles. Shiva, and when it says in the Mishnah, Shiva means kilos, that means wax. Okay. So now you're asking, of course, what do you mean wax? So now, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Adkan Psilpsilos, up until the list in the Mishnah, up to the one, Veloy B'Yerotka Shalpnei Mayim, including that, is Adkan Psilpsilos. Those are things that are possible for wicks. Mikan V'Elach, from Zephyr and onwards, is Psil Shmanim, is things that are possible to use for fuel for the wick, whereas to use as fuel for the lamp. And last pita, well, obviously, we know the difference between what you can use for a wick and what you can use for fuel. What is the price adding with that? The answer is Shaiva, Tzrichalei. The answer is the Chiddush that the Braisa wants to tell us, is that you should know when we're talking about wax, we mean using wax as a fuel. Mao detemel psilis nami leishazir. You would think that maybe what the Mishnah means is you can't use wax as a wick either, meaning to use candles like the kind we have, where you have wax wrapped around a wick. Maybe that should be possible as well. Kamash Malan, therefore, the Braisa is telling us that no, wax is possible only if you're using it as a wick, as a fuel. Wax is possible only if you're using it as a fuel, but not if you're using it as a wick. Meaning, in other words, if you're wrapping it around the wick, or like we do, where we dip a wick into wax and make a candle out of it, that would be fine. With that said, though, Tosfos brings from Bnei Narbona, from the Chachamim of Narbonne in the south of France. Also, a couple of the other Rishonim learn this way. Also, the Rif talks of the Rif mentions it in Atshuva. The Ramban mentions it. That no, when we say you're allowed, when all Gemara is saying you're allowed to use wax candles for Shabbos, that would mean only if you're using the wax candle, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, as a wick kind of. Meaning that what you're doing is you're taking a wax candle and then putting it into a container of oil and using it in effect as a wick. So then what you have is the candle wick that is drawing up both oil and wax. That they say that would be fine, but to use just wax candles by themselves, like they do, the Bnei Narbona and a couple of other Rishonim say that that would be no good. However, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that wax can, in fact, the Ramban points down that connection. The Ramban says, I mean, look, you have to realize, he says, when you light wax candles, if we're saying the whole reason you're not supposed to use these things on Shabbos is because they tend to need adjusting because they don't burn so cleanly. Well, you see, wax candles tend to need a lot of adjusting as well, says the Ramban. However, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that you are allowed to use wax candles by themselves because wax candles by themselves, at least when the wax is pure, then they do burn very cleanly and brightly and flame doesn't jump around and whatever. And therefore, that's the halacha, you are allowed to use wax candles by themselves. So that's the point that the Braisa wanted to tell us by saying that wax is part of the list only of fuels that are also, but not of wicks that are also. So if you were to melt a bunch of wax and put it in a container and put a wick into it, then it would be oster because then it doesn't burn so well. But if you use a candle made out of solid wax with a wick inside, then again, according to a minority of Rishonim, it's no good, but according to the majority of Rishonim, it's fine and you can use it, and that's in fact what we do.
Okay. The question is whether it's going to burn cleanly. Our candles burn very well.
That's true. Now that Ramban points out, and maybe candles were made differently in his times, that Ramban points out that in fact not, but you see, practically speaking, that Ramban says that candles tend to need a lot of adjusting. But apparently, so it could be...
So what is it? Is it the wax or is it the adjusting?
Okay, you have the Gemara is telling us that, keep in mind, it's like this. The Gemara is telling us over here that the Mishnah, rather, whatever, is telling us that you have certain kinds of fuels and certain kinds of wicks and certain kinds of fuels that you can't use for Shabbos candles. The question is why. So the Gemara doesn't spell out the reason why not. The Gemara just says because the Gemara does a little further spell out that the reason is because in the case of the wicks don't burn well. They're what the Gemara calls misachseches, which Rashi gives two explanations. Either the flame jumps around or that it only burns on the outside of the wick. It doesn't actually penetrate to the inside of it. And in the case of the fuels, it's that they're not nimshachin achrab sila. They don't get drawn up well into the wick. So the question, why that should be a problem, why it would be a problem if the flame is misachsecha, so the oil is not drawn up well, that you have. Rashi gives the reason that then you have the problem shema yata, that you might try adjusting the candle or the flame to make it burn better. And of course, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that. And according to Tosfos Yeshanim and the Rambam, somewhat differently, they say that the idea is because since you're supposed to have light in your house for the mitzvah of Shabbat and for Shalom Bayis, if the flame is not going to burn well, then you're not going to have Shalom Bayis and you're not going to have the mitzvah. You're not going to be keeping the mitzvah of Shabbos candles well. As the Rambam says, you may just decide to leave and say, forget about it. I can't be bothered with this dim flickering light, and then you're missing out on the mitzvah of Shabbos candles. So therefore, the question then becomes, what is it with wax candles? So again, the Ramban writes that if you're worried about Shema Yase, he says, if you're worried about that, you need to trim it, that you need to trim it, that you need to adjust it, that you need to whatever, then practically speaking, we find that wax candles need that. Nowadays, by the way, also, I mean, the wicks for wax candles are made nowadays differently than they were in the Ramban's time. So that's a difference also. Nowadays, you don't really need, nowadays, the wicks for candles are self-trimming. As part of it burns, and it falls off, and then you have, and then it continues to burn cleanly. In the olden times, you didn't have that. So then, according to the Ramban, you would have a problem. So that's what he's saying, is you'd be allowed to use a wax candle if you're putting it, let's say, in a dish of oil. So it's taking up wax and oil together, then that would be fine. But just wax by itself as a candle, he says, and the Rif says, and the Bnei Nabona says, would be no good. But again, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that wax candles by themselves are fine. All right, let's go on. Omer Rami Ba'oven, Itrona Psulta de Zifta. So Rami Ba'oven tells us like this. Itron, which we're going to learn later on in the Perek, is another fuel that you're not supposed to use for Shabbos candles. It's like turpentine or something. That is Psulta de Zifta. That is what's left over from pitch. So you take pitch, you take, Rashi describes, when you get pitch out of a tree, out of a pine tree or something. After that, if you heat up the wood further, then you get a clear liquid, which is called itron, in Hebrew, it's turpentine in English. And shaiva salted the dopsha, and wax is what's left over after the honey, because honey comes in honeycombs, and again, the same idea. You crush the honeycombs or you heat them up, as we said the other day, and you get the wax out, and then what's left behind is the honeycomb, which is the wax. What's the practical difference? Why do we need to know these definitions? The reason is lemeka chomemka, as far as buying and selling. Meaning, in other words, if a person is buying, let's say a person is buying wax from somebody else, then what he's entitled to is what's left over from the honey. In other words, Tosfos spells out that what it means is, in other words, that if somebody promises and they make a business deal, I'm going to sell you a certain amount of shaiva, all he has to do is give him the wax from the honeycombs. The other guy can't say, but I expect it to be processed further or something. You can just give him basically the raw honeycombs once the honey's been removed, and that's all he's entitled to, and then he can do the rest of the processing of it himself. That's the point of mentioning then that wax is the psoilus of honey, and the same thing with itron being the psoilus of zephyr, the pitch, is that all he has to do is just give him the raw material, and the other guy is going to have to do any further processing of it himself. Okay. Why don't we learn in a braisa? Kol elu sha'amru ein madlikin behem b'Shabbos. All of these things that we said you can't use for Shabbos candles, we can't use them for candles because, as you said, they don't burn well. Avol eisen mehen midura. but you're allowed to use them to make a fire, a big bonfire, because there there's not such a problem that they don't burn well because each one helps the other one burn. So you're allowed. Bainless Kham and Kenegda, whether you're making a fire in order to warm yourself up by it. Bainless Shtamish La'oda, whether you're making a fire to use the light. Bain Agave Kavka, Bain Agave Kira. You're allowed also whether you're making the fire on the ground or whether you're making it on the stovetop or different gears over here in Minota on top of a candelabra, whatever. All that's also is to use them as a wick for a candle, for a lamp. When you have a big fire in the fireplace or whatever, even if you're using these wicks or these oils that the Mishnah said are no good, then when it comes to a big fire, like in the fireplace or whatever, then they'll help each other burn, and therefore it's okay. We said in the Mishnah, v'loy b'shem and kik v'chola, we said in the Mishnah another kind of oil that you're not allowed to use is called shem and kik. So my shem and kik, what is the definition of that? So Shmuel says, I asked all the people who go down to the sea, sailors or people who trade in or do international trade or whatever. Anyway, and they told me, there is a certain bird that lives in the city near the coast, near the ocean. The kikshmo, and its name is kik. And there's a certain kind of oil that you can get out of such birds. Many kinds of birds produce oil, which they use. They rub their feathers with it to keep them waterproof. So that oil conceivably can also be used for various purposes, including lighting. But again, we're saying it doesn't burn cleanly, and therefore you can't use it for Shabbos candles. Rabbi Yitzchak Breider of Yehuda says a different definition, that shemen kik of our Mishnah is cottonseed oil. Rish Lakish Amar Kikoyin B'Yonah. Rish Lakish says a third possibility, that it means the Kikoyin that we find in the story of Yonah. We have in Master Yonah, we have in the last parak over there, you have the part over there after Yonah predicted that Nineveh is going to be overturned, and everybody did Shuvah, so it wasn't overturned. So Yonah is sitting there waiting to see what happens. So you have in the Tzukim over there, which describes how Hashem made a Kikoyin grow for Yonah to give him shade, and Yonah is very happy. And the next day Hashem sends a worm to kill the Kikoyin, and then Yonah feels very bad. The sun is beating down on him, and Hashem tells him, you had Rachmanus on the Kikoyin, which only lasted for one night, and you didn't even plant it. How much more so I had Rachmanus on Nineveh? But the point is that it's an actual plant, the Kikoyin, and therefore that you can make oil from the seeds of it, as you can from most plants, in fact. And that kind of thing is what the Mishnah is calling Kikoyin Diyana. It is what the Mishnah is calling Shemen Kik. So the Gemara describes it, Amar Rav Baba Chama, the Didi Chozili Kikoyin Diyana. I personally saw a Kikoyin of the type that Yonah had. Or maybe he meant to saw the actual Kikoyin B'Yonah, although I don't know, he lived a few hundred years after Yonah, by that time it was probably long gone, but whatever. It resembles a tzluliva, which is a type of plant with large leaves. It grows in ponds or swamps. So it grows in swamps. While Pumchanusa Madlam Yase, people put it by the entrances to their stores because it gives a nice smell and gives shade. From the seeds of it they make an oil. And under the branches of it, all the sick people in Eretz Yisrael lie under such trees, because again, it gives them good shade and it gives them a nice smell. In English, this plant is called a castor oil plant, and the seed and the oil that's made from it is called castor oil. It's a very thick kind of oil. In the olden days, they used to use it, among other things, when a person needed to be loosened up to be able to go to the bathroom, for example, then they would use it. But in any case, it's an oil. I don't know if they use it nowadays for much, but whatever. It's some kind of oil, but it's very thick, and again, it doesn't burn well, and therefore you can't use it for Shabbos candles.
Okay. Oh, my God.
It's a plant. It's called a castor oil plant. And the oil that's made from it is called castor oil, yeah. So again, well, that's you have three different definitions over here in the Gemara of what shemen kif is. The Mishnah just said shemen kif. So you have three opinions of Amoraim what it is. Either that it's oil from this bird called kif, or that it's cottonseed oil, or that it's this castor oil. Okay. Given that we're not sure, we really don't use any of those. Although there are achronim who say that maybe when it comes to cottonseed oil, maybe especially because it's not so certain that mishcha dekaza Rashi defines it as cottonseed oil, but that's not necessarily everybody agrees with that. Especially since it's only one of three opinions of Amoraim. And in practice, we see that cottonseed oil, when it's purified, does burn well. So it's possible. That's possible that maybe you would be allowed to use pure cottonseed oil. Maybe the Gemara only means when you have it with impurities in it, maybe then it doesn't burn well. The Bach actually says something similar about wax. He says that maybe even those Rishonim that we were saying before that don't like using wax candles, maybe they would agree when the wax is purified, like we have nowadays, maybe it would be allowed. All right. Rama says, here's the general idea. The wicks that the Chachamim said you can't use them for Shabbos candles, the reason is, as we said before, because the fire is misachseches in them, which Rashi says two explanations, as we said before. One is that the flame doesn't stay steady, it jumps around a lot. And the other is that the flame doesn't actually, the fire doesn't actually burn all the way to the inside of the wick. It just sort of stays on the outside of the wick. Okay, so that's why you can't use those wicks. Shmonim sh'amr ha'chamim ain't not looking behind. And as far as the oils and fuels that we said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to use, the reason is mifnesha ain't in them shock and achrap sila, because they don't get drawn up into the wick well. So again, according to Rashi, the problem is that then you're going to try to adjust it in order to make it burn a little better, and then yeah, that would be also on Shabbos. And according to Tosfos Yeshanim, it's because it might just go out and you want to shalom bias. And according to the Rambam, slightly differently, since you may just leave the room and then you're not going to have the mitzvah of Shabbos candles. Okay. Bomine Abaya me Rabba. So now Abaya asks Rabba a question. Shmonim sh'om l'chachamim ein l'mikim v'en b'Shabbos. These various oils and fuels that we said you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles. Ma'u sh'yithim l'seichan shemen kol shehu v'yadlik. Would you be allowed to add a certain amount of regular oil to them and then use them for candles? Because in other words, the point is, when you mix them with some regular oil, like olive oil or whatever, then the olive oil, of course, gets drawn up easily into the wick. So therefore, it'll bring along with it the other fuel, and therefore it'll burn much better. So is that allowed? The question is, mi gazrin and dilma osi lad luke beinayu, do we make a gzera that you shouldn't because you might end up using the other fuels by themselves? If, let's say, for example, to take the first example of our Mishnah, zephas, which is pitch. If you were to, let's say, if you were to mix together pitch with oil, let's say, then it would burn, but on the other hand, the problem is that then you may end up just using pitch by itself, and we said that doesn't burn well. So do we make that zera, or lawyer, do we not make that zera? And we say once you put in some oil, then it's okay. Omalei, ein ma'amikin. So Rabbi tells him, no, you're not allowed to. The question is, my timer, why not? And the reason is, l'fisha ein ma'amikin, because you're not allowed to. Meaning, Rashi says, it's not actually because you're not allowed to, meaning, well, yeah, it is. In other words, Rashi says, because you're not allowed to use them by themselves, therefore we also make a gzera that you're not allowed to use it as part of a mix. On the side of it here, and then there's a shot that brings from the Aruch an explanation when we say, what's this expression, ein madlikin, l'fisha ein madlikin, you're not allowed to light it because you're not allowed to light it. In other words, we have a Kabbalah, we have a din from the Chachamim that you're not allowed to light using these fuels, and therefore that applies across the board, whether we have, even where you would think the reason doesn't apply in the usual way because you have some oil mixed into it. So that's that. Once we have the rule that you can't use these things for Shabbos candles, then you can't use them even if there's some oil mixed in with them. Okay. Eisveis, Abaya says to Rabba, I have a contradiction to you from a Braisa then. We learn in a Braisa, Korach Dava Shemadlikin Boy, Agabe Dava Shein Madlikin Boy. If a person wrapped something that you're allowed to use for a wick, around something else that you can't use for a wick. So let's say, for example, in the Mishnah, we had, let's say, we had one of the things we said that you can't use for wicks. Let's say the last thing we said with Yeroi Tashal Pnei Mayim was these barnacles or whatever that grow under a ship that's in the water for a long amount of time. So let's say, for example, you were to take that and then you were to wrap it, let's say, in cotton or whatever, which cotton works well for wicks. So the Braisa says, Eima Bikinboy. Then you're not allowed to use that for Shabbos candles. But the Omer of Shimon Gamliel, or Shimon Gamliel, shall base Abba Hayukochim Tefillah Agabe Egel. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, in my father's household, they would wrap a wick around a nut, and a nut obviously is not something that you can use for a wick for Shabbos candles, or Madlikin, and they would light Shabbos candles with it. Katani Mias Madlikin. So we see that you are allowed to use a wick that was, you see that you are allowed to use a compound wick that includes something that you can't use and something that you could use, because Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that that's what they did. So you see, the same thing should be true as far as fuel, that you should be able to mix in some oil with, you should be able to mix in some oil with one of these things that's also and be able to light with it. Amalei, the rabbi says, what kind of a question is that? Instead of asking the question based on what Rav Shimon Gamliel says, say, you know, the Tanakama, just the opposite. You can support what I'm saying based on what the Tanakama said. The Tanakama is saying you can't do that. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Okay, so you have a machlokas tanoim, I'm telling you the halacha is like the Tanakama. What's the problem? The answer is holokasha maite rab. Fine, but that's not a problem because, you know, when you have an actual thing that was done with halacha l'maisa, then that's stronger. Maisa rab, the maisa itself is a rab, is something that teaches us something. In other words, we find sometimes we have a tana or an amoda will say something where sometimes a tana or an amoda will say something, and they're saying this, they're saying it hypothetically, this is what we hold, but not necessarily that they would actually paskin like that in practice. But over here, we see that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that his family actually did this way in practice, where they would wrap a wick around a nut and light them and light the combination. So that's a much stronger thing to say that it should be allowed. So therefore, a biased question is still valid. We see that in practice, not just theoretically, but in practice, they would do that. So that works as far as wicks. So why shouldn't it work as far as oil? And as far as fuel. So Mekomachim Kasha, so we're still left with the Kasha, why is it that in the case of wicks you would be allowed to, and in the case of fuel, Zaba, you're telling us that you're not allowed to. My Lav Lahavlik, shouldn't we assume that they were wrapping the wick around the nut in order that the whole thing should burn together? So in other words, a nut by itself is not really usable as a wick. It's not going to draw up the fuel into it. But they're combining together. They're wrapping a wick around the nut in order to make a thicker wick. And then the point is that it's allowed. So we see that it would be allowed because once the outside is burning well as a wick, then the inside will end up burning well. The inside will end up burning as well. The answer is loy lahakpois. No, because that's not necessarily what Rav Shimon Gamliel means. He doesn't mean that they wrap the wick around the nut in order to make a thicker wick where the whole thing is going to burn. They're wrapping it around it in order that the nut should help the wick float better. So like you have nowadays, you know, some people when they light the menorah, they use those floating wicks. They have those little cork pieces that go around the wick to prevent it. In theory, at least, they prevent it from sinking into the oil. So the same thing with Shimon Gamliel's family would do that as well. That's not a problem to have where you're using the nut just as a base for the wick to prevent it from sinking in. What you can't do necessarily is to use the nut as part of the wick itself. So therefore, there's no contradiction to Rabba. You can't use a nut that's part of the wick the same way as you can't use pitch or any of the other things listed in the Mishnah as part of the fuel. Okay, the question is, if you're just using the nut in order to help the wick float, then why would the Tanakhama disagree with that and say you can't do that? Why would the Tanakhama have a problem with it if the nut itself is not meant to actually burn, it's just meant to hold the wick up? The answer is kulot of Shimon Gamliel. The answer is actually, you're thinking that there's machlokes in the Braisa. There's not actually. The entire Braisa is Rav Shimon Gamliel, is Rav Shimon Gamliel's statement, the Chasuri Machsura, meaning that the Braisa is missing words, the Hochi Katoni, what it means to say is like this. If you wrap something that you can use for Shabbos candles around something that you can't use for Shabbos candles, then a Mavlikinboy, then you wouldn't be allowed to use the combination four Shabbos candles. The Med Burma Mum Lahamlik now would become part of the Braisa that's missing. That's only talking about if you're trying to use the combination as the whole thing that's going to burn together, that's going to try to draw up the oil or the fuel or whatever together, then you can't do that. But if you're just using the other thing in order to make the wick float, then it's fine. And we see Sherev Shemling Amiloima, because we see that Shemling Amil says, Shalbeis Abba Hoyer Kochim Tzilah Agave Egers, that in his father's household, they would do that. They would wrap a wick around the nuts and light that. So you see, therefore, the Braisa is not saying that you're allowed to use a combination wick. The Braisa is saying that you're allowed to use something else in order to help the wick float. But not that you can use it as part of a combination, but the wick has to all be made out of materials that you're allowed to use for Shabbos candles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to ask, still any? Still is that so, that you're not allowed to use anything other than a pure oil that you can use for Shabbos candles, that you can't mix in an oil that you're allowed and an oil that you're not allowed? Is that so? V'ha'amar Bruna Amar Rav. Didn't Rav Bruna say in the name of Rav? Chelev Mehutach. Melted chalev. Now we said in the Mishnah that chalev is one of the things that you get. Chalev from an animal is one of the things you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles. But Rav Bruna is telling us that if this fat is mehutach, is melted, the kirve dogim shen mohu, or fish guts that were melted down, odem noisim lefecha shemen kol shehu, then you're allowed to mix in a little bit of oil with them, umavlik, and then you're allowed to light them for Shabbos candles. We see that you are allowed to do that. We see that you're allowed to, even though the Mishnah said you can't use chalev, you're still allowed to mix in a little oil, and then as long as the chalev is melted, and then you're allowed to. By the way, Tosfos points out later on in the parak we're going to be discussing something called shemen dogim, which means fish oil, which you are allowed to use for Shabbos candles. So therefore, Tosfos says obviously the shem. Now Rashi over here says. That's it. Rashi later on rather says, when it mentions shemen dogim, Rashi explains it means fish guts that are melted down. But Tosfos says that based on our Gemara, it can't be that. Based on our Gemara, such kind of thing, you wouldn't be able to use for Shabbos candles. You wouldn't be able to use such things for Shabbos candles, but... give me one second. Looks like we lost Ellie at some point. Okay, I didn't see you on the list. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Anyway, Rashi later on defines shemen dogim as melted fish guts. Tosfos over here says it can't be, because later on we say that shemen dogim you are allowed to use, and our Gemara over here is saying that kirve dogim you can't use unless you mix in a little bit of oil. So there's different explanations about that. Beis Yosef talks about an idea that there's a difference between whether similar to what we said before about wax and other such things, you have a distinction between whether they've been clarified, whether you have just the pure oil that comes from them, or whether you still have some of the actual fish guts or whatever mixed into them where it hasn't been strained out first. Similarly, actually, he brings from the Ran also that when we're saying chalev mehutach doesn't just mean fat that was melted, but it means, in other words, he says that fat that to begin with came out already melted. When the animal is alive, the chalev is liquidy or almost liquidy. Later on, it solidifies. So we'd be talking about when you first took it. The Ran says that we'd be talking about when you first took it out of the animal. So the same thing, the Beis Yosef says that maybe according to Rashi, we would say that there's a difference between the purified oil that you get from the fish gut versus the impure oil. Anyway, the point is, we're saying in the Gemara over here that you're allowed to add a little oil and then you're allowed to light it. So what are you telling me, Rabbah, that you can't do that? The answer is like this. Hani mimshechi be'enayu. The reason is like this. Really, even without mixing in oil, chalev mehutach or kirve dogim would burn well. They would burn cleanly as a candle, as a lamp. Bahani loy mimshechi be'enayu, as opposed to the various things we mentioned in the Mishnah, which includes chalev that was not mehutach, that was not melted or that didn't, that already solidified or whatever, those don't burn well. the gozu rabbanon al chelav mohotach mishum chelav she'ini mohotach. So all it is the chachamim made of zera. You can't use fat that was rendered, that was melted down, because you might come to use fat that was not melted down. In the case of the fish gut, you're not allowed to use ones that were melted down, because you might come to use ones that are not melted down, which don't burn well. But once you have, in other words, in and of itself, so you have within chelav itself and within kirvei dogim themselves, you have a kind that burns well and a kind that doesn't burn well. In the case of chelav, for example, there's a difference whether it's mehutach or not, whether it's melted down or not. When it's melted down, it does burn well. When it's not melted down, it doesn't. So therefore, when the Mishnah says that you can't use chelav, and when the Mishnah said you can't use chelav, then it means chelav that was not melted down. And that you can't use even if you mix in a little bit of oil. But if it's melted down, or if the Gan says, where it's to begin with taken out of the animal and already liquidy, then the only reason not to use it is because of xayla, because you might confuse it with the other kind of chelav. Therefore, if you mix in a little oil, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. The question is, why don't we make xayla about even if the fat was melted, or even if the fish guts were dissolved, were melted, that you put in some oil, say that you should make a gzera, you can't use it even if you add an oil, because you might confuse it with the case where you don't add oil, and we said that if you don't add oil, then it's also. The answer is, because that itself, the whole thing itself, not to use such fuels is a gzera, but anan nekum v'nig gzera. You want that the chachamim should make a gzera in order to preserve another gzera. We don't do that. So therefore, we have like this. So when it comes to chelav she'enei mehotach, when it comes to non melted down fat, then you're not allowed to use it, as it says in the Mishnah, because it doesn't get drawn up into the wick well. So therefore, that would be also even if you added a little bit of oil to it. If it's mehutach, if it's melted down, rendered, whatever, then in principle you would be allowed to use it even without oil, because then it does burn well. The Chachamim are telling you, though, don't use it without oil at all, because then you're going to forget and you're going to think that you can use it even if it wasn't rendered. But once you put in some oil, then you're ready to say that should be also, because you might confuse it with the case where there's no oil, and in turn you might confuse that with the case where it's not rendered at all. That would be exeral. We don't do that. So here is where the Tosfos Yeshanim says that, after all, if we say that the reason why you can't use these things is based on what Rashi is saying, because Shema Yata, then already you have to use any. Whoever that's nearby, can you put it on here? So here's where the Tosfos Yeshanim says that's not really the original thing. It's not a Gzeira Shema Yata, as Rashi had said, but rather because of the problem that it's going to go out and then you're not going to have Shalom Bayis. So therefore, to say that you can't use the wicks and fuels that we said in the Mishnah is not a Gzeira L'Gzeira, because not the original thing, the original reason is not a Gzeira, but rather because of the practical fact that it will go out. Rishonim explained that Rashi would answer to that. Rashi, who says that the reason is Shema Yata, would say it's pretty much inevitable. If you use one of these wicks or one of these fuels without oil mixed in, then almost inevitably it's not going to burn well, and almost inevitably you're going to try to adjust it, and therefore you're not really saying Zera to begin with that you might adjust it, because it's pretty much a certainty that you're going to. The first Zera, therefore, is don't use these oils and wicks. That's not a Xera, because if you use them, inevitably you're going to come to want to adjust the flame, because it's going to be dim and flickering. And then, so then the Gemara is saying that when the fuel itself would work well, and it's just a Xera, because you might confuse it with another kind, then already we don't make a Xera, and then you're allowed to mix in a little oil. So the bottom line, therefore, is to answer Abaya's question, therefore, the answer is like this. When the Chachamim say that you're not allowed to use a certain fuel, then you're not allowed to use that even if you mix in some oil. But if it's not that the Chachamim said you can't use that particular fuel, it's just that you can't use it because it's easily confused with another one, like, for example, chelav that was melted, which might be confused with chelav that was not melted, then the Bruna is telling us you are allowed to mix in a little regular oil and use it all together. Tony Rami Bachama. Rami Bachama taught a brisa. Silus Shmanim Shomer Chachamim Ein Madlikin Ben B'Shabbes. These various wicks and oils that we said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles, Ein Madlikin Ben B'Mikdash. He says you're also not able to use them for the lights in the Beit Hamikdash. Because the pasuk says to make the constant flame go up. So what does that mean? Who Tony La Rahu Amala? Rami Bachama taught the Braisa. He also explained what it means, how we're learning from the Halas Ner Tumim that you can't use these oils and wicks. Because because you have to have that the flame is able to go up, is able to rise up by itself. Not that you need something else, not that you need to constantly be tending to it and trimming it and tilting it and whatever in order to make it burn. And since we said that the reason why you can't use the various oils and wicks of our Mishnah is because they don't burn well, then you'd have the same problem if you use them in the Beit Hamikdash. Because if you use them for the menorah, in the Beit Hamikdash. The Pnei Yeshua, by the way, asked the question, why do we need to mention the oils? Of course, when it comes to oils, you anyway can't use it. You anyway have to use shemen zayis stuff. If you use pure olive oil, you're obviously not using tar or chalev or shemen kick or what have you. So why does he need to mention the oils? So he says, because one of the ones we had in the Mishnah was shemen sreifa, was oil of truma, olive oil of truma, which needs to be burned because it became tummy, and the only thing the Kohen can do with it is burn it. So that's what we're saying, that you can't use it in the Beit Hamikdash either. Now there you don't have so much the issue because it's not going to burn well, because olive oil will burn just like any other olive oil, but because the lights of the menorah are also bahana, because they belong to Hekdesh, therefore you're only allowed to burn truma in a way that you're having hadal from it. So that's the point when he says, when we say you can't use the various oils that mentions in our Mishnah for the menorah and the Beis Mikdash, he doesn't mean obviously you can't use the tar or the chalev or what have you, but it means even the shemen sefer. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah that says that when it came to Simchas Beis HaSheva, they lit these big tall lamps to make a lot of light for it. And the Mishnah says, Migloy Michnasei HaKoyinim Umehem Yeneihem, they would use the worn-out pants and belts of the Koyinim. From then, Hoyu Maskiyin, from them they would make wicks. They would tear off pieces and twist them into wicks. Umehen madlikin, and they would use those to light these lamps for the Simchas Beis HaSheva. Now the point is the belts of the Kohanim, you actually have a machlokas in a few places in Shas, whether the belts of the Kohen head yet were made with wool and linen or just plain linen, or Gemara is going according to the opinion, which is the halacha, that the belts of the regular Kohanim were made with wool and linen. So therefore there's wool in them. And we still see that they would tear off pieces of them and use them for wicks. So you see, you are allowed to use. Now we said before that you can't use wool for wicks for Shabbos candles because we said it doesn't burn well. It shrinks right away when you try to burn it. But here we see that you're allowed to use something that contains wool. Okay, Tosfos points out, it is true you have linen in them as well, but you have, the linen is only a small amount compared to the amount of wool, because you have, the belts of the cranium are made of chelas fagom and telas shani, blue wool, purple wool, and crimson wool, and then you have also pishtun, then you have linen, so you have, the linen is only like one quarter of the whole thing. So you have much more wool than you do linen. And we still say that you're able to, that they tore off pieces from these things, from the belts, and they would use them for wicks, for Simchas Beis HaSheva. The answer is Simchas Beis HaSheva shiny. Different when it comes to the lights for Simchas Beis HaSheva. Those are not lit in the menorah. Those are just lit on these big candelabra that they had standing there in the Beis HaMikdash. Fine. There you don't have any particular din. That the wicks can be made or can't be made out of certain material. We're talking strictly about the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Toshma, the Tony Rava Bamasna. Okay, but we have another braisa that Rava Bamasna taught. Bigde Kahuna Shabalu, the worn out clothes of the Kohanim, the clothes of the Kohanim, once they became worn out, and once they're worn out, they can't use them anymore because the clothes of the Kohanim have to be new looking and nice looking, they can't be dirty or whatever. So once they wear out, Maskianosan, they would tear them into pieces, or Mehenahoyu Osan to look for Mikdash, and they would make wicks for the Beis Mikdash for them. And here we mean, when we say wicks for the Beis Mikdash, we mean including for the menorah. So you see that wicks for the menorah could be made out of the clothes of were made out of the clothes of the worn out clothes of the kohanim. My lab kilayim, doesn't that mean that they would also use the items that are kilayim, which again would be the belts of the kohanim at yotim, and it would also include certain of the clothes of the kohen gadol, the ephod, the choshen, whatever are also made partially out of kilayim. It was just like the boots. Not necessarily. It could be that Rav Bamasna's Baisa is talking they would use for that purpose strictly the clothes that are made only out of linen. For example, the Mishnasayim, the Ksonis, the Mitznefes, the Mikbas, all of those are made out of pure linen, so those would work well for wicks. But not necessarily. Are we saying that they would use the ones that contain wool for wicks for the menorah? That they wouldn't, because as the saying, the ones that you can't use for Shabbos, you can't use for the menorah either. But they could use them for the lamps, for Simchas Beis HaSheva, because there it doesn't matter. There you don't have any particular mitzvahs of what you can and can't use. Okay, so that's the maskana, is that they would do that. They would use for the menorah. They would use pieces of the kohanim's cloth, of the worn out clothing of the kohanim that were made purely out of linen, because linen works well for wick. But when it comes to the ones that contain wool, those they would only use for wick that they needed for other purposes, for example, for Simchas Beis HaSheva. Omer of Hona. So now we're going to get into, now that we're talking about lighting Shabbos candles, now we're going to get into the other time during the year when we light candles for a mitzvah, namely Hanukkah. It's interesting, by the way, that, you know, unlike Purim, where you have a Masechta, or half a Masechta at least, that deals with the detailed dinim of Purim, there is no Masechta in Mishnayos of Hanukkah. You have Hanukkah is mentioned in a number of places in Mishnayos, including we're going to learn on Omer Beis, one of them, from Bava Kamma, but there is no actual Masechta in the Mishnah that deals with the dinim of Hanukkah. The dinim of Hanukkah we're going to be learning in our sugya over here over the next, today and the next couple of days. A lot of interesting reasons given why that is, why there's no Masechta Hanukkah. The Chassam Sofer says an interesting idea about it, because he says the Hashmonaim illegally took over the kingship. Like this, we know kingship among the Jewish people is supposed to be reserved for Malchus Beis David. The Hashmonaim are not descended from David. They're the Hashmonaim are Kohenim. So therefore, Rebbe, who is descended from Beis David, held that against them, and therefore he didn't write a Masechta of Hanukkah, and left it for the Gemara to teach us the halacha. So says the Chassam Sofer. Would you have different Achronim deal with what does the Chassam Sofer mean by that? Because Rebbe had something personally against them, therefore he's not going to include their Yom Tov in the Mishnah. So you have a bit of discussion about what the Chassam Sofer meant by that. Reuven Margolius has an interesting idea about it. He says, we know that Rebbe was friendly with Antoninus, the Roman emperor, and he says it's highly likely that after Rebbe composed the Mishnah, that the Romans found out about it not long afterwards and found out what he's writing and what he's composing over there, and they would want to see it. They'd want to have it translated for them and explain to them what this is all about. What are all these laws of the Jews? The Romans in general were big on trying to understand all the cultures of all the various peoples that they ruled over. So therefore, he says, the problem is, what are we celebrating on Hanukkah? We're celebrating that we defeated the Greeks, that we defeated a hostile power that was occupying Eretz Yisrael and preventing us from doing mitzvahs. So therefore, he says, if they were to write a Masechta of Hanukkah and the Romans found out about that we're writing about the dinim of celebrating a Yom Tov when we defeated a Goyish oppressor, then the Romans wouldn't look very kindly on that. And therefore, Rebbe felt compelled to leave it out. Another idea they say is that in general the Mishnayos don't include dinim that everybody was familiar with. We also don't have a Masechta, for example, that deals in detail with the dinim of tefillin or mezuzah or whatever those are dealt with in Menachos. You have a number of sugyas there that we've learned that deal with the dinim of tefillin and mezuzahs, how to write them and how to wear them and whatever. But you don't have actually in the Mishnayos anywhere. And the idea would be that Rambam says because everybody was familiar with those halachas, so in the same way everybody might have been familiar at that time with the mitzvah of lighting the menorah on Hanukkah, and therefore Rebbe didn't feel a need to write it in the Mishnah. But anyway, so all Gemara over here, beginning over here on the bottom of Fafala Fabanalis and continuing off and on for the next couple of blocks, we're going to be learning up until Das Kuf Gimel, we're going to be talking about the various dinim of lighting candles on Hanukkah. So the Gemara starts off. Omer of Hanukkah. These various wicks and oils that the Chachamim said you're not allowed to light with them on Shabbos, So Rav Huna says you're also not allowed to use them for lighting the menorah on Hanukkah, whether on whether the Shabbos during Hanukkah or whether the weekday days during Hanukkah. Omar Rava, my timer, Rav Huna. So Rava says, why does Rav Huna say that? So let's say, first of all, Rav Huna holds that if the Ner Hanukkah goes out before the amount of time has passed, you know that the candles are supposed to burn at least for half an hour, as we're going to say soon. You actually have on minute or 50 minutes, but whatever, the minimum is half an hour. But Rav Huna holds that if the candle goes out during that time, Zokakla, then you're required to relight it. So therefore, you have to begin with light it in a way where it's going to be able to last the full half hour, because otherwise, Yashi says you may get careless and you're not going to fix it, you're not going to make sure that it burns the half hour. So therefore, to begin with, you have to use a wick and an oil that is going to be able to burn well for that amount of time. And also Rav Huna holds, umutul leishtamish la'ora. Also, Rav Huna holds, you are allowed to make use of the light of the menorah on Hanukkah. Now, we know, of course, that's not the halacha, and we're going to discuss that soon in the Gemara. We say in Haneret Halala, v'ein lono reshus leishtamish behem. But Rav Huna disagrees with that. Rav Huna says you're allowed to. So the fact that you have to relight the menorah if it goes out is why on weekdays you have to use the proper kinds of oils and wicks, because otherwise, as Rashi says, you may get careless and not fix it. And the fact that you're allowed to use the light is why you're not allowed to do the same thing on Shabbos, because on Shabbos, of course, fine, you're not going to relight it because you can't on Shabbos. But on Shabbos, if you're allowed to use the light, then on Shabbos, what's going to happen is, again, you're going to try to tilt it or adjust it or whatever in order to make it burn better, and then you'd be over on an Isser Shabbos. Tosfos points out the reason why the Gemara, that's the point, the reason why Rava is saying that why Rav Huna needs two reasons. Maybe it's just a matter of that if it goes out, you have to relight it, and on Shabbos, you're not going to be able to do that. But the point is, Tosfos says in that case, then Rav Chista didn't have to mention the words Ben Bechil, Ben Shabbos at all. He could have just said, you're not allowed to light with them on Hanukkah. The fact that he specifically mentions you're not allowed to Ben Bechil, Ben Shabbos teaches us that he's giving two different reasons. One that applies to weekdays, because you would have to relight it, and you might get careless and you might not. And the other one that applies to Shabbos. You can't relight it on Shabbos, but you might end up using the light of it. Okay, so that's Rav Huna. Rav Chista Omer Madlikin Ben Bechol Avaloy B'Shabbos. Rav Chista disagrees. He says you're allowed to use the no-good wicks or the no-good oils. You're allowed to use them on the weekdays of Hanukkah, but you're not allowed to use them on Shabbos Hanukkah. Why? He holds that if the lights go out, the Hanukkah lights go out, you don't have to relight them. So therefore, there's no problem on weekdays lighting with a no-good fuel or a no-good wick, because it doesn't matter. Even if it goes out, you lit it. It could have conceivably burnt for that half hour. The fact that it goes out in the middle is not your problem. But he also holds a mutter, the Shvamish La'ura, but he also holds, So in that first one, he disagrees with Rav Huna. Rav Huna had said, Kovsa Zokakla. Rav Chista is saying, Kovsa Ein Zokakla. That's the menorah goes out, you don't have to relight it. But on the other hand, he does agree with Rav Huna, Umutali Shtamish La'ura, that you are allowed to use the light of the menorah for doing work or whatever. Therefore, on Shabbos, you'd have a problem, because on Shabbos, if the light is not steady, then he's going to try adjusting it. Okay. So that's opinion number two. Opinion number three, Amar Rav Machna, Va'amila Amar Rav Zera Amar Rav. Rav Machna says, or some say that Rav Zera says in the name of Rav, a third opinion, Tzilus Shmanim Sh'omer Chachamim Ein Madlikin Ben Shabbos, Madlikin Ben Chanukah Ben Chol Ben Shabbos. Note, these ones that you said you can't use for Shabbos candles, you could use them for the Chanukah menorah, whether on weekdays or whether on Shabbos. Amar Rav Yimya. So Rav Yimya says, my time of the Rav. So why does Rav hold that? Because he disagrees with Rav Huna on both the things that Rav Huna has said. He says, Kovsa Ein Zokakla. He says, like Rav Chista had said, that if the menorah goes out, you don't have to relight it. So therefore, there's no problem using an unsuitable fuel or an unsuitable wick on Hanukkah for the menorah, because even if it does end up going out within the half hour, that doesn't matter. You did the mitzvah, and you're not obligated to relight it. But he also holds, unlike both Rav Huna and Rav Chista, but also the Shtamish La'orah, that you're not allowed to use the light of the menorah to do any kind of work. So therefore, even on Shabbos, there's no problem that you may adjust it to make it burn brighter, because you anyway can't use the light of it to do any work by. This is, by the way, the reason. This is the reason why. Well, we're going to see further down on the Omer why you have the shamash by the menorah this way. If you're going to be using the light, then you're going to be using the light of the shamash. Although we'll talk about Bez Hashem when we get to further down on the Omer, we'll talk about something that the Bach says on that, where he says it's actually not so simple. Okay. But anyway, so that's the halacha. The halacha is like both of those statements of Rav, that if the menorah goes out within the amount of time that it was supposed to burn, you're not obligated to relight it. And number two, that you're not allowed to use the light. So therefore, the result of that is that you can use any oil you want and any wick you want, because even if it doesn't burn steady, it doesn't matter. Even if it goes out, it's not your problem. And you're anyway not going to be able to use the light to do any kind of, to read or to do any kind of work by. So therefore, you're not going to come to adjust it. Okay. So the Gemara tells, Amrur Rabbanan Kameda Abaya Mishmei Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim one time told over this explanation of what Rav is saying, that Rav holds Kav Zain Zachaklav, also the Shtamish Larda, they told that over to Abaya in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Veloy Kibla. He didn't accept it from them. He didn't consider Rabbi Yehuda important enough or distinguished enough or whatever to rely on his, to say that his explanation of what Rav is saying is the correct explanation. He also, Robin, later on, when Robin came, years later, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, Amrur Rabbanan Kameh Da'abayim Mishmei Rabbi Yechanan, then Robin told them that Rabbi Yechanan had said the same thing, and the Chachamim told that the Chachmei HaYeshiva told this over to Abaya in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, the Kibla, and then he accepted it. Because Rabbi Yechanan is someone that you can definitely rely on. Omar, and now Abaya says, and in retrospect, if I had had this chus to begin with, then I would have been able to, then I would have learned this statement, I would have learned this understanding of Rav to begin with when they first presented it to me in the name of Rav Yehuda. So like this, I lost that opportunity, and only now am I doing it years later. So I'm asked, what's the difference? For Hagamra. The bottom line is he did eventually learn it, so he did eventually find out the reason of what Rav is saying. Who cares about the fact that he didn't manage to earlier? The answer is, Nafkamina Lagirsa de Yankosa. It makes a difference as far as what a person learns when they're younger, they retain better than what they learn for the first time when they're older. So therefore, Abaye is saying that if I had had this course, I would have learned this many years ago when they first told it to me in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, and I was much younger, and I would remember it much better now than now when I'm older and they're telling it to me in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Okay, now I learned it, but I'm not necessarily going to retain it and remember it as well as I would have if I had learned it years earlier. Are you telling me that according to Rav and according to Chista, if the Hanukkah light goes out, you're not obligated to relight it? Or a minu, I have a contradiction. A braisa says mitzvosa meshetishka chama. The mitzvah to light the menorah begins when the sun sets, and you actually have a few different opinions among the poskim what that means. Does it mean shkia? Does it mean seis? Does it mean sometime between them? Or minhag is we light between mincha ma'ariv, which is therefore between shkia and seis, closer to shkia. Anyway, so the mitzvah begins then ad shetichler regel menashuk, and it continues until nobody is walking around in the streets anymore. My lab the ikav sahodim adlikla. Now the Gemara assumes what the braisa means is that it has to remain burning that whole time from Shkia until people leave the marketplace. Meaning, in other words, that would mean that if it goes out during that time, you have to relight it. The answer is loy. That's not what it means. It means the e loy adlik madlik. It means if you didn't light right when, it's a my lab the ikav sahodim adlik. Or doesn't that mean that if it goes out, then you have to relight it? The answer is loy. That's not what it means. The e loy adlik. All the braisa means is if you didn't light right at Shkia, then you have until people stop walking around in the street to light it. So it's not telling us that, it's not saying it has to be burning the whole time. It's telling us that's the period of time during which you can light the menorah. The inami, the shiura, or another possibility is that the braisa is telling us the amount of oil you have to have in there in the first place has to be long enough to burn from when shetishka hama until kichlo dago menashuk. But not necessarily to say that if it goes out during that time, you should have to relight it. So that's the halacha, therefore. So you have the halacha is you are supposed to light as soon as possible after Shkia, which is what we do. If you didn't, then you have until Tichla Rego Menashuk. Although it says in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays, maybe, given that, as the Gemara is going to say soon, nowadays most of us don't light outside our houses. Most of us light inside our houses, so we're primarily doing it for the sake of our family members anyway, so maybe there's less of an issue of lighting it later as long as family members are awake. And that's generally how we do it. It's still better to light it while there are still people walking around outside, which the post can say is a half hour after Sefer Kohavim. But according to many posts, then you are allowed to nowadays that we light inside. Then you're allowed to light it later if necessary, as long as your family members are up. If everybody in the house is asleep, by the way, then I think it says in Shulchan Aruch, then ideally you try to wake one of them up if you can. But if you can't, then you just light it without a bracha. In any case, though, we don't say that if the candle goes out during that time, you have to relight it. The halacha, in fact, is like Rav, you don't have to relight it then. You put in enough oil and enough of a wick to last long enough, then it's not your problem if it goes out during that time. Okay. We said ad shetichlad regel min ashuk. We said we said the time for lighting the menorah is until people stop walking around the marketplace. The ad kama, so what does that mean? At what point do we say everybody is gone from the marketplace, from the street? Until the feet of the Talmudoi are gone from the marketplace. So what does that mean? Rashi explains, Talmudoi are people from a place called Talmud, where they used to collect small pieces of wood, and they would be around in the marketplace later on, because you'd have people are going home at night, they're lighting candles or lamps or fires or whatever at home for light and heat and whatever. So sometimes you have a person realizes when they get home and are getting ready to light their fire or their candles or whatever for the evening, they realize that they realize they're out and they have to go buy more. So then they go and find one of these Talmudoi in the street and they buy from him little pieces of wood that they can use to make their fire. So therefore, the Talmudoi would stay out in the street longer than everybody else, because everybody else is already going home, getting ready to light their fire for the evening, and the Talmudoi are still staying out there selling pieces of wood for anybody who needs it. So once the Talmudoi are gone, then that's it. The sidewalks are rolled up, and everybody is home. But up until that point, you still have the Talmudoi outside, and therefore that's the time during which you could still light the menorah with a bracha. There are many, many places in Chassidus, there are many Maimonim and many Sichas, where the Rebbe talks about the idea that the deeper meaning behind this is the Talmudoi are, first of all, there's a Gemara in Yevamos that mentions that the Talmudoi are actually descent. Talmud is actually a city that the Pasuk mentions was built by Shlomo HaMelech. It's someplace in Syria, nowadays in English it's called Palmyra, whatever, however you pronounce it. Anyway. The Gemara mentions over there that it was populated by servants of Shlomo, but eventually these people rebelled against Shlomo and against the Jewish people, and they helped the Goyim both at the time of the destruction of the first Beis Mikdash and the second Beis Mikdash. So the Gemara mentions over there, according to one opinion, you're not even allowed to accept any of them as Gerim because they're such degenerate people. So we're saying that even when they are outside in the street, it's still a time to be lighting menorah, because the menorah is, you light the menorah outdoors, and the idea of Hanukkah is turning the darkness of Rosh Chodesh Adar into light, which is why you're supposed to light the menorah, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Al Pesach Beis in Vachutz, on the outside door of your house, because you're supposed to illuminate the outside world. Even these low down degenerate people like the Talmudoi, their name even indicates the word Talmud is the same letters rearranged as Meredes, as rebellious. Even these people, even these low-down, degenerate goyim who are rebellious against Hashem and against the Jewish people, even them, the light of the menorah on Hanukkah is supposed to illuminate them and make them into a different kind of person. So therefore, that's the deeper significance of the idea that you have. On the one hand, the word kalya, actually, the Rebbe also talks about, the word kalya has a double meaning. It means to destroy, and it means to destroy, so it means, in other words, that the light of Hanukkah destroys the evil and the negativity of these Talmudoi, and also there's the Meloshim Klois HaNefesh, that it brings them to even these low-down people, it brings them to a higher level of engagement with Elokus, where they also start feeling a certain Klois HaNefesh, they start feeling a certain yearning towards Elokus that they didn't have before. That's a deeper meaning then of what it means that we're saying over here, that the menorah is supposed to burn until Kalya Rigla the Talmudoi. As I said, there are many, many Sichas in Maimorim where that ever develops that idea. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, mitzvah of Chanukah ner ish u beisoi. The basic mitzvah of Chanukah is that every night you have one candle for a person and his household. The minimum is one candle per household. Now, Mahadrin, then you have people who are Mahadrin. Now, we're familiar with the word Mahadrin. We usually understand it to be Meloshon Hodor, to make the mitzvah beautiful. Rashi over here actually learns that it means Meloshon, the Aramaic word, Hodor, which is actually when you say Hadran Allah. It means people who look around, people who look around for the best possible way to do the mitzvah. So those people, the Mahadrin, they do Ner L'chol Echad V'Echad, they do one light each night of Hanukkah for each member of the household. So in other words, let's say, so the Rambam says, if let's say you have 10 people in the household, then such people, the Mahadrin, would light 10 lights on each night of Hanukkah. The Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, then you have the Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, you have the extra, they're the people who are extra careful about mitzvahs. So then they light more. How much do they light? So the famous Machlokes, the Shammai says that you start by lighting 8 candles the first night, and each night you do less and less, so the second night 7, and the third night 6, etc. Or Basilon and Yom Rish and Mabat Achas, the Sibyl says, which of course is how we do, that the first night you light one, Mikanda Elach Moses Baholach, and then you keep on adding 2 on the second night and 3 on the third night and so forth. As we know, there's a verse, I think, from the Avodraham that says that the name Chanukah itself represents that, because it stands for Ches Neris, that we light 8 candles, the Halacha Kibetilu, and the Halacha is like the Silo, about that we go upward. By the way, so an interesting point over here, the question is, first of all, it's interesting that with Hanukkah, unlike pretty much every other mitzvah, we have these 3 levels of doing the mitzvah. You don't really find that by other mitzvahs where you have Mahadrin and Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin. So one idea is, I think the Beit HaLevi says, that because you have when it came to Hanukkah itself, you had the Jewish people were Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, they were going above and beyond, because technically, the Gemara is going to mention soon, we'll learn it tomorrow, that's the Shem, about the mitzvah of the oil, they didn't have to go looking around for pure oil, they could have lit using oil that was Tomei, because Tumah Hutra B'tzibah, or Dchoya B'tzibah, as the case may be, but they were Mahadrin, and they were going the extra mile to try to find pure oil, and therefore, when it comes to the mitzvah of Hanukkah, therefore you have the special thing that you have Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, that you don't really find by other mitzvahs. Tosfos over here deals with the question, do the Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, that we're saying that you start with 1 and work your way up to 8, is that adding to the Mahadrin or not? The problem is, Tosfos says, on the face of it, it shouldn't, because the problem is like this. If, let's say, for example, you have 10 people in the household, so what happens? So we're saying the Mahadrin are going to light 10 candles. The problem is that then on the second night, let's say, if in that household you find that now they're lighting 20, let's say, because the second night of Hanukkah times 10 people, the problem is a person who sees that, a person who sees 20 candles outside is not necessarily going to realize it's the second night of Hanukkah. He's going to think, okay, there are 20 people living in this house now. So therefore, Tosfos argues that the Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, would be that they only light an additional candle every night, but not that they multiply it by the number of people in the house. In other words, according to Tosfos, you have like this. The basic mitzvah is 1 candle each night. Mahadrin would be 1 candle per person. So if you have 10 people in the house, let's say then 10 people. Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, would be that the first night 1, the second night 2, etc., regardless of the number of people in the house. The Rambam, on the other hand, learns that the Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, is on top of the Mahadrin. So the Rambam writes, if you have 10 people in the house, then the Mahadrin, and the Mahadrin, the first night they light 10, the second night 20, etc., all the way up to 8, on the 8th night, because 8 times 10. So it's interesting that so in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. The Mechaber brings what Tosfos says, the Rambam brings what the Rambam says. So the Taz says, here you have a very interesting and an unusual situation where you have Ashkenazim follow the Rambam, who was a Sfardi, and Sfardim follow Tosfos, who are Ashkenazim. So we Ashkenazim lights, we have everybody light separately. Now, actually, we have Minhag Chabad is that women and girls don't light for themselves because the woman is yotze with her husband, and the Rebbe talks about in a letter someplace that therefore there's no reason for the girls to light by themselves because anyway when they grow up and get married they're going to be yotze with their husband, so therefore there's no reason for them to light when they're younger. Of course, in the Velt, you have many people who do differently where the daughters and the wives do light for themselves. But anyway, among Sardin, the general minhag is that you just have the Baal Bayis light on behalf of everybody, like Tosfos is saying over here. Continues the Gemara. So what's the reason behind the Shammah and the Sewell's opinion? Amar Ola, Pligiba Tre Amaroy the Ma'arava. So Ola says there are two Amaroyim in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, who argue on what the reasons are. They are Rav Yosef Ba'av and Rav Yosef Ba'azvida. Chad Amar, one of them says, Taimat to Beth Shammah can make a Yaman and Anachnosim. Beth Shammah says that you have to look at the days that are yet to come. So on the first night of Hanukkah, you have 8 full days of Hanukkah left to come, therefore you light 8. On the second night, you have 1 day has passed, you only have 7 days left, therefore you do 7, and so forth. The time of the Basilos connected Yom HaYotzim, and then Basilos' reason would be based on the number of days that have already passed, so therefore you start with 1 and work your way up. The Chadom, the time of the Beshamah connected Poreach Chag, the other one says that Shammah's reason is based on the Poreach Chag, the bulls that they would bring as Korbanos during Sukkot, where we know that it would go down day by day. They have 13 on the first day, 12 on the second day, and so forth. So Beshamah says the same thing when it comes to Neiras Chanukah. You also do the same thing. What's the connection between Poreach Chag and Chanukah, by the way? So one idea is, in some of those stichos, the Rebbe develops the idea that the Poreach Chag, we know, are meant to represent the gradual diminution, the gradual going down of the negativity of the Goyim and coming closer and closer to the time of Mashiach. And the same way, as we're saying, the lights of Hanukkah are also meant to be removing the clippers and negativity in the world, and therefore the Shammah sees the connection between them. In the books of Chashmonaim, it's interesting, the books of Chashmonaim are not part of Tanakh, but they tell us, that because they're written a couple hundred years after Tanakh was finished, but they tell the story of Hanukkah from various points of view, and they mention there that year, the year when the Nes Hanukkah took place, a couple of months earlier, Sukkot time, they weren't able to celebrate Sukkot properly because the Goyim were in control of the Beis Mikdash. So now, what they did is, when they made the Chanukah HaMizbeach and the Chanukah HaBayis, then they did like a symbolic celebration of Sukkot again at that point. They didn't bring the actual Korbanos, but they still made a symbolic celebration of Sukkot, and therefore like that creates a certain connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah. Anyway, so that's another reason for Bishamai. The time of the Basilos, the Mile and the Kodesh Bain Miridin. And then Basilos reason would be based on the idea that we know that in Kedusha you always go up, you don't go down. So therefore you have to go up and continue doing more than you did the previous day. So the Gemara says, Amar Rama Baba Chana Amar Bechanan, Shneiz Kedim Hoyim Sidon, there were two old Tamil Chachamim in the city of Sidon. Echad Osik B'Shamay V'Echad Osik Diva B'Silol. One followed B'Shamay and started with 8 and worked his way down to 1. The other one did like B'Silol and went from 1 up to 8. Zen Noson Tam with Barav Kenei and Pari Achad. One of them, the one who did like B'Shamay, said because we're doing like we do with the bulls on Sukkot, where we go from 13 down to 7, so the same thing, we're going from 8 down to 1. The Zen Noson Tam with Barav, the other one who did like B'Silol, gave the reason for what he says. The Malin Bakodish Vein Meridim, the fact that we always go up in Kedusha, we don't go down. The Rebbe points out in a Sicha, and actually you find various other Achronim say similar things, that a Naskamina between the two reasons could be, what a couple of Naskaminas could be. One is, let's say for example, you have, let's say on the second night of Hanukkah, for whatever reason, a person lit only one candle. So now on the third night of Hanukkah, does he have to light only 2 or does he have to light 3? If you say the reason is Malin Bakodesh, then all you have to do is light 2, because before he lit 1, and now he lights 2, then he's going up. But if you say it's Keneged Yom HaNichnasim, if you say that it's based on the number of days, Keneged Yom HaYotzim, rather, based on the number of days in the past, then on the third night, he still has to light 3. Another Nafka Minute would be the other way around. What if, for example, a person, let's say, on the third night of Hanukkah, has only 2 candles? Should he light those 2 or not? If you say the reason is because Malin Bakodesh Vein Meridin, then at least he should be lighting 2. That way he won't be going down compared to what he did before, because last night he lit 2 and tonight he's also lighting 2. So, okay, he's not going up because he doesn't have a third one, but at least he's not going down. At least he's not in Meridin. But if you say the reason is because of the number of days of Hanukkah that have passed, then there's no advantage to lighting 2 versus lighting 1, because either way he's not lighting enough for that night. So those are a couple of Nachminas between the various reasons for Basilos. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with more about Hanukkah. That's the Shem, more dinim about Hanukkah and the source for the whole story of Hanukkah and various other things.
Let's see, tomorrow night, right?
Oh, right. Tomorrow night, that's right.